really happy news came, and that is that David McBride, the whistleblower who was put in jail for actually doing the right thing, telling the world that Australian troops were killing prisoners in Afghanistan. He was put in jail for not revealing the truth so much as being not being allowed to reveal classified information. It was it's not the information that was important. It was the fact that he was employed by the army and he wasn't allowed to actually tell people something as heinous as war crimes were being committed in Australia's name. Anyway, he did serve 2 years and he's had many vocal supporters. There was an appeal process going on that didn't squash the sentence, but his parole period has arrived and he has been let out of prison. So that is actually a good news story.
That is great news.
Yeah, that's
really,
right.
Really good news.
The other one, I guess, is the enormous amount of students, school students. I must say they're not voters, but they are the future generation, rallied against Hanson and over the week in all different parts of the country.
Yeah, Sydney, Brisbane and Melbourne.
Large contingents.
Large contingents of students.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think we did hear some the typical dronery from some politicians that they should be at school. I saw something quickly on Thursday where Pauline Hanson's flunky, who left the National Party, his name escapes me at the moment, and he's, I'm sorry.
One with the red head.
No, he used to be Barnaby Joyce.
Yeah.
Made statements like, oh, well, they must be influenced by socialist teachers. But I think what's missing here is that this sort of activism has been happening at schools for quite some time, for at least a decade. And it stemmed from, initially stemmed from concern over climate collapse.
Well, yeah, of course. Yeah. And it's been suggested by some pundits that these young'uns are not apathetic when it comes to politics. They're just over capitalism. I mean, they obviously can put two and two together and it equals four.
So instead of politicians criticising students for being, political active, they should actually encourage them to have political consciousness.
Oh, well, it's interesting because it goes back to something that Tabea said last week about the push for the renaming of one of the libraries in the name of
Gaetano Greco.
Greco, because, yeah. And one of the standout features of that man was his inclusivity and particularly his fondness and respect for young people, listening to their concerns and talking to them with respect. It's probably something that people in general should emulate. I find it really odd that people don't. Interestingly enough, there's some other things going on. The Salvos accused the Melbourne City Council Mayor, Nick Rees, of breaking his election promise of $6 million to the Salvation Army's homeless services and $3.2 million to Melbourne City Mission for the same. This is reported in The Age. Neither of the organisations have received any of this money. Rees, who appears to have caught the Labor Party politician's disease of saying something that seems to mean one thing and then doing the complete opposite, will remember already under a cloud for pushing the safe city agenda at the cost of millions to hire safety officers with the specific aim of removing homeless people and removing their belongings. Reports from homeless people thus affected include confiscation of belongings, removal to distant suburbs without supports and disrespect. The Age reports Rees saying, "We are in ongoing dialogue with the Salvation Army to ensure that the service they provide is done in a way which doesn't present any additional risks to people who run businesses or live at or visit that end of the city. So if Reese's credentials as the progressive was ever in doubt, the adage, it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, it is a duck, should definitely be applied to support homeless services, support the Homeless Persons Union and their work raising the service bar for unhoused people through advocacy. Completely outed. Nick Reese, mayor of, that's his agenda and that was why he stood, it would appear. I wanted to talk about something which is completely different, which is Monash-led research has revealed that one in 10 butterfly species globally has shifted its distribution range with climate change and extreme weather driving nearly 80% of documented movements, which is quite a fascinating thing to think that the butterflies are our litmus test for the climate change effects that are going on. The study, the largest of its kind, analysed 6,182 range shift records for 1,758 species across 105 countries, drawing on English and non-English scientific literature, as well as 68 expert assessments. Lead author, Dr. Shorin Chowdhury, head of the Global Change Ecology Lab from Monash University School of Biological Science, says the findings expose a rapidly changing natural world and major blind spots in how biodiversity change is monitored. If you didn't get a chill from that sort of report, I don't know what should be a chilling aspect to it all. We urgently need coordinated global monitoring, especially in the tropics, to understand what species are doing, where they're going, and how we can protect them. This is particularly important to meet the Cumna Montreal Global Biodiversity Framework targets. There you go.
Yeah, that's kind of a little bit hard to take in, but that news item takes me back to many years ago when I was a youngster. And I remember, I think I was in year 10, my science teacher actually spoke about climate change and actually spoke in the context of the rapid pace of industrialization in London in the late 1890s, that because of all the effects of fog and smoke, that it actually changed the colours of butterflies changed to like black.
Yeah, oh, yeah, right. Yeah. So that they could blend in. You might have noticed that there were some strikes during the week. One of them was the Allied Health Workers. They went on strike for a third time on Tuesday the 11th. A large contingent of Victorian Allied Health Professional Association members, the VAPAR, gathered outside Peter McCallum so that those members usually unable to be part of the rallies because they must keep the system going could join at lunchtime. Despite the mainstream media focusing on wage increases, which are important because Victorian allied health professionals are paid less than their counterparts in other states, the issue of career path progression, workloads and staff retention is part of the claims. Members came from across the state, including Ballarat, Bendigo, the Peninsula, Gippsland, to join their city compatriots. It was a big, noisy rally and people were quite invigorated coming together to put forward the need to save the public health system. I mean, they're talking about them as workers, but actually they're completely committed to maintaining a effective public health system for you, the listeners.
And that news item reminds me of, there's been some coverage over the last week in The Age about problems within the mental health sector. Apparently, a CEO has been appointed from Queensland and they're like on a fly-in, fly-out basis. There's also a Victorian government report that kind of falsified or underreported how things were actually going in the mental health sector. So This is an ongoing issue.
Well, yeah. There was a planned 3.5-hour strike by Victorian Public Hospital doctors on August the 13th. That was a couple of days after the vapour rally. But it was called off at the 11th hour after the state government launched a legal challenge over union notice paperwork. So the industrial action by the Australian Salaried Medical Officers Federation, ASMORF, was postponed for a week. Got them into trouble, even though they gave them 2 weeks notice. But the thing that got me was the demands. Pay increase. Doctors are asking for we're talking about public doctors, all those doctors that you meet when you go to the emergency and all that. Pay increase. Doctors are asking for a 30% pay rise over 4 years. Workloads. Union demands include maximum shift lengths of 12.5 hours and 2 consecutive days off per fortnight to fix unsafe hours. Now, get that, put your head around that. Like, they want to have days that are no longer than 12 and a half hours of work straight, and they want to have at least 2 hours between 2 days a fortnight consecutive, so that they can get their heads in place. Like, they can actually have a rest.
Yeah, well, the people that look after you, how can they look after you if they're not feeling well and not resting?
That's just unreal, isn't it?
Yeah, I just wonder whether, to some extent, it shows that, the caring professions, maybe there's something, some degree of exploitation in there, people taking advantage of people who are looking after others.
Yeah, I think you might be right.